Hi everyone, this is Heather Varaich, and I'm recording the third episode of the podcast series that explores the intersection of heart failure and palliative care. And this episode will focus on a unique subset of patients with heart failure. As explained earlier, there are two major types of patients with heart failure: patients who have low ejection fraction and patients who have a normal ejection fraction. In some patients with low ejection fraction, therapy such as heart transplantation might be considered, but there are many patients who may not be candidates for a heart transplant and whose symptoms might be very severe despite medical therapy. These groups of patients could be eligible for an LVAD. LVAD stands for left ventricular assist device. It is a mechanical heart pump that gets surgically sutured into the left ventricle of the heart. It basically takes over the pumping function of the heart, which is severely depressed in patients who have low ejection fraction. Traditionally, LVADs have been placed for two major indications. One is for patients with low ejection fraction who have severe heart failure who are waiting for a heart transplant. The second is what's called destination therapy. And this is the more common indication in which LVADs are placed in patients who are never going to be candidates for heart transplantation and therefore live out the rest of their life with an LVAD. And while LVADs are one of the most dramatic advances in therapies for heart failure, they can significantly complicate the end-of-life experience of these patients. So before we begin, I'm going to share a few stories that I wrote about in my upcoming book, State of the Heart, which explains and puts into historical perspective just how dramatic and revolutionary this therapy is, and how it can truly change the course of a patient's life, especially as death approaches. LVADs are the most visible and dramatic piece in a movement that will change what it means to be human, and it starts with the commodification of human organs. Cardiologists are at the forefront of finding a home for devices to live in the human body. Not just LVADs, patients can receive pacemakers and defibrillators that monitor every single heartbeat that we emit. We can have monitors placed in our arteries that constantly measure how much pressure is in the heart, how fast is blood flowing, and if you're experiencing worsening symptoms of heart failure. Unlike a smartwatch that measures your heart rate, these devices require invasive procedures for implantation and surgery to be taken out, and they're vulnerable in the same way as any computerized device is to hacking and sabotage. Such technology has transformed a doctor visit to a tune-up, and sometimes when people are in real trouble, they don't really need a doctor, they need an engineer. Durable implanted cardiovascular technology is only the start, and technologies that are housed within our bodies that can take over the function of other organs are no longer something conceived by Isaac Asimov or Arthur C. Clarke, but by living, breathing scientists in the lab across town. Ancient humans imagined the heart as the organ that was the first to live and the last to die. No longer. The human body can live long past the failure of the heart. As LVADs change our concept of life, they may have an even more dramatic effect on what the lack of life is. I learned this, like I have learned so many important lessons in my training, at 3 o'clock in the morning. The heart has for almost all of time been the determinant of life or death. Yet a patient with an LVAD can die even as their LVAD is running at full sprint, even as they have a normal rhythm on their EKG. Living with an LVAD can be really hard, and sometimes dying with one can be even harder. As his LVAD broke down, so did his life. As he became moodier and angrier, his care network, a ragtag collection of friends and ex-girlfriends, started to dissipate until all he had for company was the doctors and nurses in the hospital. Along the way, he had also contracted a serious infection around his driveline. Multiple visits back to the operating room to clean out the infected tissue around his driveline couldn't fully get rid of the colony of bacteria that had now found a home in his body. Every few days, that colony would seed his blood with bacteria, causing a septic reaction throughout his body. By this time, antibiotics were keeping him alive as much as the LVAD was. The infection just ate him away until he was barely recognizable. He appeared shriveled like a dried date, and yet despite our best efforts, we could not slow his descent. He fought it, but eventually decided that he didn't want any breathing machines or additional trips to the ICU. If it was his time, he wanted us to let him go. Then one day I got the call. It was a nurse. She wanted me to come over to see him. No one spends more time with LVAD patients and understands the patients as well as the nurses do. So imagine my surprise when I reached his room and found the nursing staff just standing around as if they were frozen in time, appearing flabbergasted. They thought he had died, but they weren't sure. He had stopped breathing or moving, but the question was, how does one die when they still have blood pumping furiously through their bodies with an LVAD? Because the room was otherwise oppressively silent, the hum of the LVAD was faintly audible. When most people die, it is usually the heart that dies first, starving the brain of oxygen, which follows inevitably. At other times, the brain dies first, as it might after someone has a massive bleed in the brain, or someone overdoses on heroin and stops breathing for a while, and the patient is declared brain dead, but the heart continues to beat. These nurses had seen everything that could happen to an LVAD patient, yet they hadn't seen someone die, and neither had I. I turned on the EKG monitor, hoping a flat line would bail me out, but there was a regular rhythm there. Fact was that I had to think of him as if he were heartless, so I focused on the brain and what it does. He was not breathing, and when I poked the corner of his eye with my gloved finger, he didn't blink, meaning that his brain wasn't performing its most basic functions. I declared that he had indeed died, but when I scanned the room, it was very clear to me that everyone knew that they were entering a new era and had seen a face of death they had never seen before. Disconcertingly, the LVAD was still running, so I dialed the number of one of our senior LVAD nurses, who had been managing LVADs for years. Like IT support guiding me over the phone, she walked me through the drop-down menus of the LVAD until I reached the prompt to stop the LVAD. I looked around, still unsure of exactly what I was doing, and then pressed a button, and after a stark countdown with the LVAD alarming loudly, the LVAD stopped. I had effectively turned a human being off. More than 1 in 10 cardiologists, in fact, consider turning off an LVAD as equivalent to euthanasia, and almost 2/3 think that an LVAD should only be deactivated if a person is imminently dying, essentially saying that once a person has an LVAD, they're essentially a prisoner of technology, with the only out being death itself. It can be hard to know what to do with a heart that will not stop until it is asked to. Not only does it change how we doctors think, it changes how patients think. I once took care of a patient who had such a bad infection of his chest from when the LVAD was implanted that his breastbone never really healed and one could actually see a bit of his LVAD at all times whirring away in his chest. Naturally, this window just meant that infections incessantly kept entering his body, and this time they were severe enough to require him to breathe from a breathing machine under anesthesia. While he was anesthetized, our team wasn't sure that this was a road he could keep going down on. His chest was so intractably infected that there was no way we could clear it of the infection. I was hoping to talk to him after he woke up, if he could, about whether perhaps we should de-escalate and help him spend some time at home with his family. When he eventually woke up, and I happened to be in the room when he did, he told me quite clearly, "Doc, I want to live forever. And when the end comes, I want to live some more." Too often, when our best efforts fail to improve patients' quality of life, we do not have important conversations with patients, not just about how they would like to live, but how they would like to die. I met a man in his mid-70s who was one of the earliest recipients of a destination therapy LVAD. Clyde had an LVAD implanted 7 years earlier, and he had perhaps outlived most people who had received an LVAD. Yet despite the years that he had gained, it had been far from smooth sailing. He had been admitted to the hospital about a dozen times. At times for bleeding from his intestines, at others because he had received electric shocks to get his heart out of dangerous fast heart rhythms, like ventricular tachycardia. This time around, he was sicker than ever before. After he had endured a rocky course in the ICU, when he was a bit more stable, I remember asking him what we could do to help him. "I want to go home," he told me. Clive lived on a farm and missed not being able to spend enough time there. All he wanted, he told me, was to ride his tractor one more time. He knew that his time on Earth was close to an end, but was surprised no one had asked him about these things in the many years that he had been ill. We called our palliative care team to help us transition our care to a treatment pathway that was focused solely on making Clyde feel better and honoring his wishes. Contrary to what you might think, palliative care can actually prolong life in some patients who might otherwise have received procedures or therapies that can have serious complications, bringing an abrupt end to a patient's life. Clyde's LVAD was unable to provide him with the support he needed by itself, so we had to start a continuous IV medication to help his original heart beat stronger and to help him maintain enough blood pressure so that oxygen could reach all his vital organs. He wanted to go home, so we made arrangements to enroll him in hospice, a program offered for patients at the end of life that provides them additional resources to be able to spend time at home. The hospice, however, was uncomfortable managing the IV infusion and asked us if we could turn it off. It was important for Clyde to be able to go home. At this point, it was the only thing he wanted, the only hope he had left to cling to. We turned off his medication, as we were asked to, but his blood pressure dropped, and he died within hours. It had been more than 2,000 days since he had received the LVAD, and only 4 days since one of the most important conversations of his life. He died in the last place he wanted to be in. Clyde is far from the only patient with heart disease to experience what many would consider a bad death. Over the course of the last century, we have made great strides in helping patients with heart disease live both better and longer. And yet the inevitability of death remains the only certain thing in human existence. As we anticipate the next big thing in heart disease that could help patients live better, like a new medication that could dissolve atherosclerotic plaques, or the next LVAD that could be wirelessly charged and obviate the need for a driveline, we must also figure out how we can help patients with heart disease die better. In the next and final episode of this podcast series, I will share how best we can integrate palliative care in the care of patients with LVADs. Thank you for listening to this podcast.